Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Real Estate Investor Goddesses podcast. I'm your host, Monique Hom. On this show, we interview successful real estate investing goddesses, and we interview people who are real estate investors and are a super great resource for real estate investors. And today I'm excited to have a woman who is both. She is a real estate investor and she provides innovative solutions for property managers. Our guest, Linda Liberatore, is a real estate investor and property manager, and she has super innovative solutions for property managers. She speaks at real estate investment groups and national conferences. She's a best-selling author. She recently released her second book, My Landlord Helper, The Keys to Managing Your Real Estate Investments and Achieving and Saving Money, something we all need. She's a Forbes Real Estate Council member. She's a coach for Think Realty, and she's the winner of the 2017 Property Manager of the Year Award. So we are super excited to have her with us. She's a high-energy, hardworking entrepreneur. She specializes in technology for real estate and project management for property management. So her past experiences have allowed her the ability to learn and grow, and she's passionate about sharing this knowledge to help others, and I am excited that she's here to share her knowledge with us. Welcome, Linda.
Oh, welcome to you. I'm equally excited and quite frankly honored to be on this show. I know you provide so much value to your listeners, and you just do a great job getting out there and getting them the information they need. So I feel so honored to be here, really, quite frankly.
Oh, thank you. I think the pleasure is all mine, but it's equally pleasurable. There are a couple of things I want to talk to you with you about today. So I want to talk about your story, because we're all about the stories of the women. So I'd love to hear about your story, but I also really want to get some questions about the property management in general, because you have so much experience for that, and I know that's a huge concern for a lot of our listeners, how to be a successful landlord. But let's start with your story. How did you get started in real estate investing?
That's a good story. I got started years back. I had small children in the home, and I actually started doing bookkeeping and technology for a real estate investor. Actually, it was two of them at the time. Ironically, it was one that had residential single families, and she's a partner with me today. Am I saying that right? She would be, I'd be the partner, right? But she had done it for years, and she really, really was excited about it and got me equally excited, and she still is today. And then I did it for a gentleman that owned warehouses. Just outside of the O'Hare area, if you know O'Hare Field outside of Chicago, that's our big airport. And right, as you can imagine, the surrounding area, especially, back in the day, was just really loaded with warehouses and manufacturing because they were so close to the airport. So he owned quite a slew. So the way some people buy single-family homes, that's how he bought warehouses. So that he had quite a portfolio. So I helped them with bookkeeping. He at that point was retired and just collecting rents. So I got to see that end of it.
Nice.
And exactly. And then I got worked with her as she grew her business. So that was what got me started.
That's great. So what was the first property you got?
It was a townhouse. I don't know, they're different words, different parts of the country, but they're like adjoined homes, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like shared association.
A townhouse or row house. Yeah.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
exactly. And that really was, I'll call it her primary focus for her real estate investing. And so she liked that model. In fact, I have a few clients now that have that model too. some with single family, some with multifamily, but hers was always kind of the townhouse, the association. I don't know, you know, that as with anything else that's gone through some cycles, I don't know if you felt the same, but here in our area, when the foreclosures were, you know, I'll call it rampant, that became a real stress on those associations, which, of course, then became a stress on the association dues. So we did pretty well with that, but there certainly was a lot of people that if they weren't losing the home itself, they were losing it because of the dues, because then all of a sudden the association started coming down. And we were in communities, though, luckily, that were had percents. I'm guessing because you speak to people nationwide, you've heard of that, where they make sure X percent of it is owner-occupied. And because of that, that kind of maintains a little bit of, I'll call it the pot, if you will, for the association dues to make sure that they're stable. Well, that was, even took, you know, I'll call it quite a hit when everybody was getting foreclosed on. So we came out okay, but I know a lot of horror stories of people involved in that type of investing.
Yeah, that's a good point to think about, you know, what those dues that you that you might owe on top of a mortgage and other expenses and how that affects a rental. Yeah.
But yeah, her concept and a couple people I know, just to share with your listeners. So their concept was that the maintenance bills would be more, predictable. And because of that, it's easier to budget in that association fee than to, you know, kind of go through the ups and downs of the normal single family investment, you know, let's say roof and stuff like that. Like it was more of a predictable expense. But like I said, that took its own kind of cycle when that wasn't predicted. And as you said, it's something to think about because, as we know, real estate is a cycle. So, you know, it may recreate itself. But I think a lot of the associations have made a lot of adjustments to prevent that kind of, kind of not having enough reserves and, you know, the unexpectedness of people losing their homes and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's a good point. So that was your first investment with townhouses. Do you have other types of investments as well?
No, they're all. I have more real estate, but they are still in that townhouse portfolio. So no, they're good rentals. I mean, they're very good rentals. But like I said, they're all with this partnership, and we do them through the townhomes.
Okay. Well,
and if
great.
You could excuse me, make sure my volume is off on my computer. Sorry.
Okay, no worries. So, let's talk about then the other side of what you do, the property management side. So tell us a little bit about the property management business that you have and some of the innovative property management solutions that you offer.
I was just going to say, I loved when you said that during the intro. I'm like, oh, I've got to say it that way, the innovative. And I would say that was a really good description because the reality is we're not just, I'll call it a straight-up property management company. What we've really, zeroed in on is the fact that we really do have strong technology skills, and it really just happened naturally. It wasn't necessarily the plan. So the plan from the beginning was I created a software when I got started that would help people collect the rents. So addition to collecting rents, of course, if you know a little bit about it, I think you said you use a property management software. You know, there's the ledger and there's the lease application and, you know, all the different fields. So really when I got started, I had came from a company out of New York City that was collecting money. And I saw like just how helpful that was to have what I'll call a third party collector, as opposed to, you know, people didn't want to give up control and give it to a property manager. Does that make sense? So what I was working for wasn't real estate, but yet I knew, like, I was putting the thoughts together from the fact that I had worked with real estate investors and was still, right? And I was seeing them collect money and seeing kind of, I'll call it those pains, and then seeing that this technology and having really a third party handling the technology and the collections was really beneficial, that you didn't necessarily have to give up full control like property management, but you could find somebody to help you just collect the funds and professionalize it. And you have to imagine, when I started, it was 8 or 9 years ago, so just getting people to, I'll say, do a debit was difficult, right? People did not want to share checking account numbers the way they do today, you know? So when we started that, that's when our owners said to us, so we went to real estate investors, small ones that were looking to grow, and they were looking to, let's say, you know, offload some of their work without giving up control. Because I would say that's the biggest thing, I think, with a real estate investor. It's really hard to find a property manager that you like because of the fact that you're giving up control. And I certainly understand it. It's probably no different than, I know this is like a crazy analogy, but no different when you have to find, let's say, daycare for your, you know, your child. That it's really scary, right? And you're like, you just want to make sure you're picking the right person. And I think people feel that, let's say, emotional about their investment, like they know that all their money's on the line, and they're very afraid to find the right property manager, especially when they're smaller. I think that's really when you feel it, because not a lot of full service property managers are out there looking for their business, right? The property managers are looking for these big portfolios, and so there was at the time, especially, nobody really servicing the kind of what we refer to as the do-it-yourself investor that's just trying to grow.
Yeah. Okay. So your focus then is it on the DIY investor, the smaller investor maybe that has a couple more single family homes, and they could use some help with the collections, and you're able to help in that way, which is a great service. I know, especially if you have properties that aren't nearby. I go with my mentor's statement: live where you want to live, invest where the numbers make sense. I live in Los Angeles; it's an expensive market, so I know it doesn't always make sense for me to invest here in LA. And but when you are investing far away from where you live, then you often need to get property management. But if it's a small property, then that can be cost prohibitive. So how do you work with people that are, you know, remote investors as well, or are they all local?
No, very, very remote. some, not a lot. Actually, one of my first clients is out there in California too, and her investing is in the Georgia area. But she has, and I say but because I just was speaking to somebody the other day out of the Texas area that wants to use us. And what was really good about their scenario that I would describe to people from my perspective is they had been through it all. So they had to they did it themselves. They hired an employee, and they had a property manager in a different state. So for me, that's a really experienced landlord that really can, I'll say, understand our value. So we are a piece of the puzzle, not the whole puzzle. And if you want to stay in control, we're, you know, let's say we can be really helpful. So when we work with people out of state, one of the things we would say to them is, so for instance, if they don't have a strong, let's say, total team in place, if they don't have a leasing agent that's going to show the property, if they don't have a strong manager or something. So like the woman that I spoke of in California, the example with her is she was growing a portfolio. So she had, let's say, boots on the ground, right? So she already had like guys that were doing remodeling for her, and they were good connections to get her maintenance guys. And so in this last case, she was like, I don't want to give this to full service. You know, I just think you could be the ideal solution. And we've been with her ever since, probably 5+ years. So we handle two aspects, so I should expand on that. So we get to hear, we're the front line. So we get the maintenance calls as well. It's just that we wouldn't have our own maintenance staff to send out. So that's why it's really important to have a maintenance staff. So we'll facilitate it all. So as an owner, you're not worried about each maintenance call the same way you wouldn't be with full service. But from my perspective, you have to give me, you know, I'll call it a team of people that I can refer to. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
So
okay.
If you have those owner in place. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so say I wanted to buy a property in Atlanta, then I'd like to use you. That here is my maintenance team, or the contractor you can call on, the plumber, etc. And you would the tenants could call you to, toilet's plugged up, it's 2 a.m. And then you would facilitate getting the maintenance, the right maintenance person out there. Is that how it works?
Absolutely, absolutely. And
okay.
So if you're comfortable, I'll call it making relationships in another state, then we can be really good. If you're saying, no, I never want to see that state, I never want to know anybody in that state, you know, I just bought these buildings and I'm just looking for a good property manager and I just want to call them, then I would say
okay.
We're not a good solution. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So
yeah,
we,
that makes
because
sense.
Because of that, yeah, we hear it all, we see it all, I'd say one of the unique things we see is a lot of, I'll call it best practices. We get a lot of, like, I'll call it, we see so many different leases, so many different states and counties. We're in, right now, trying to think if we're up to 13 or 14 different states. So we have somebody right now in New Jersey, probably almost a year now. And, you know, so no, we don't ever really see the homes, but they have a good team in place as well. And, you know, because of that, we really do get to see the different counties, how they enforce the laws on payment, you know, the eviction process. And they bring all those forms to us, and we just, you know, we kind of say a back office admin. So we're taking calls, we're filling out paperwork. So we're always here for them as they grow, you know?
Okay. So you started to say there were two parts of what you did. You said the front line, you do the maintenance calls. And then the other, we didn't get to number two. So this number two about collecting payments and handling collections and that part of it?
Yes, I would definitely say that. I would say number three. So let's say the second part is the collections. And I'm going to start back with kind of your smaller. So there are kind of a couple reasons people come to us. So as they're growing, if you could picture kind of, again, if your audience is composed of people just starting, let's say, you know, a portion of your audience, one of the things that is hardest for them is cash flow is really, really an issue. And so what happens, quite frankly, that we see is their, I'll call it, heart gets in the way. Like, you know, we're just all human. And it's really hard when somebody calls you up and says, oh, you know, I lost my brother or whatever, and I can't pay the rent. And we all tend to be, you know, super empathetic to that. But the reality is they can't afford to be. You know what I mean? Like our heart is making one decision, but on the back end, we're trying to balance the checkbook and pay for the mortgage. And it quite frankly, it just doesn't work. So your heart gets in the way, as mine would and does, and I'll call it my own scenario, right? But when you enter in a third party, remember my job, first and foremost, to be successful is to get you that money. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm going to focus more on the lease, the laws. I help them find charitable organizations. We help them find alternatives to get that paid. Like, we can't just hang up the phone without some like mutual agreement as to where this is going to go. Where I've had owners just come to me and say, like, oh my gosh, like I know what I was doing wrong, but like I didn't know how to get out of it. Once like that scenario occurs, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And we've seen people, you know, more than one, they were on the brink of losing their property when they came to us, you know, because, you know, and then think about it. We also went through those years when, if you think about just everybody always refers to the housing crisis, but quite frankly, it was an employment crisis that followed it, right? Everybody lost jobs. So now if you did have property and you were okay and you weren't upside down, which many were anyway, but let's just assume they weren't, their tenants were all losing jobs, so they couldn't afford to pay rent. So now they were carrying, let's say, that burden as long as they could. And those, you know, probably were good tenants, had been with them a long time. But the reality is no cash flow is no cash flow, you know.
Yeah, and then everybody loses.
Yeah, yeah. So we had to work through a lot of delicate scenarios like that, you know.
Yeah. So what you're sharing reminds me of the story that a property management friend of mine was telling me. He has a property management company, and he has rentals, and he owns the company with his brother. And after a while, he discovered that he could not, even though he was a property manager, he couldn't manage his own property. So he would manage his brothers would manage his, because he said, you know, he had this one tenant who, you know, he said, I can't pay, my mother just passed away. And he was like, oh, okay, I understand. He sent some flowers. And then he realized, hey, wait, this is the third time in a couple of years I've sent flowers to this guy's mother who just passed away. It's like, she didn't die three times. And he's like, I can't do this myself. I just get too, my heartstrings get too attached. But if it's for his brother, it's a lot easier to say, nope, sorry, you have to pay rent. Sorry for your loss. Let me know what rent to do, when you can pay the rent. And so I can see how that's a valuable service especially if you can't necessarily afford to pay for full property management to do everything, but you may just need somebody like a disinterested third party to collect payments.
It's really true. Yeah, it's really true. And that story you told, you know, I can't tell you again how many times we hear it. And for us, like I said, it's really easy because we are the third party. We are not emotional. Our job is to collect rent. Our job is to enforce the lease. And we have to get them resources outside of the landlord. And we say that, like, I'm sorry, the landlord is not, you know, like they can't give you a loan. You know what I mean? And that's what basically, and they're like, well, I don't want a loan. Yeah, you kind of do. You know what I mean? And one of the things we say, and this goes along with the story you told that I think is really true, is, you know, we first off suggest family and friends. And if there's not family and friends to help you, like that to me, if you are doing this yourself and you're continuing, that should be your first line. And if they say, like, nobody can help me, like, that should tell you something. Because think about, like, your own personal life. And I don't mean if you're wealthy or not wealthy. If you got in trouble, your family is there to help you because you're not in trouble every month. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, I'm sure your parents or mine or whoever would not be helping them if I did this every single time. So like that's usually your first warning sign when they say that, because if there really was something, you know, terrible and tragic and that occurred in their life, they should have resources that are more than willing to help them not get evicted. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's a good point. So, I have a question that I ask all my guests, because I find that we learn so much more from our mistakes than we do from, you know, when things are going fine and are smooth sailing. So I want to ask you this question about your biggest mistake, but I also want to ask a second follow-up question. So first, what was your biggest, your own biggest personal mistake in your real estate investing career, and what did you learn from it? And then I also want to ask, what's the biggest mistake that you see property owners making? You know, as a property manager, like what's one of the biggest mistakes you see property owners, and what, you know, and how can they learn from that and stop it? So it's a two-part question.
Well, I'm gonna start with my biggest mistake. I can definitely be too much with the heart myself. Kind of mm-hmm. on the other end now, not necessarily. Well, although I will agree with that story your friend says, that was why it was good to be in a partnership and once remove myself. So as good as I am at collecting for other people, and I would say our company is like super good. That's what we get, like, you know, phenomenal, all this. When it is one-on-one, I have made some, you know, what I'll call poor judgment calls. So when you say the biggest
mm-hmm.
mistake, It really is. I'll call it letting that person in. You know, it's really
mm-hmm.
on the screening end, and it's, you know, a particular story that I can remember. Like I had all those feelings, like this is a mistake, but yet, you know, like they kept showing why it wasn't a mistake, and I let my heart get in the way of like really the data right in front of me, and I'm a pretty data person.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm, you know, have that heart, right? And so I would say I think that mistake really was a big learning. You know, this goes years back when I first started the investing, and even though I had a partner, that's even worse. That, like, I'll say two of us got, let's say, fooled, right? And yet we had all those warning signs. So when you feel the warning signs, there's a reason for those warning signs, and I've kind of learned that now, you know. So I would say that's the biggest mistake.
I love what you said, and I want to highlight two things. So one is that, you know, you said you were data-driven, and so the data wasn't there, but you were saying something else too, which I think is really important, is that it didn't feel right, and so your intuition was telling you, this isn't good as well, and you ignored your intuition. And I know that, like, personally in my life, the biggest mistakes I've made have been when my intuition has been telling me something and I've ignored it. And so it sounds like that was also what was happening there too, that you were, it didn't feel right, but you still went ahead because they had a good story.
Absolutely. And mine goes far enough back that I'd say, and we always still make common mistakes, right? But, like, the one thing I would not want your listeners to take away from that is they still have to go to the data first, always. It's still very scary to me when I hear investors go, well, no, I just didn't run the credit because I, you know, I felt good about it. I had that good feeling. Like, that's...
Right.
Listen closely to the example I gave. There was data and there was intuition. And don't just go with the intuition. That doesn't work. But the fact that my intuition, like I'll say, was right in line with that data, I don't know how I got, you know, let's say, smooth-talked into it, you know. And that was just a chance we should never have taken. Luckily, it wasn't as costly as it could have been, but it certainly was costly to us.
Thank you for sharing that, and that's a good point too. Like, you know, let the numbers talk as well. The other question, the follow up question was, what's the biggest mistake then you see property owners making? It might be the same thing, but is there a different one that
I'll try to go with a different one. I think this is such a, I'm going to use the word, they hear it at every conference. It's such a, like, kind of buzzword, like you have to treat your business like a business. And, you know, like that's the cut, right? But I think what happens in that case is no one describes, well, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? Because I can't treat it like Amazon because I'm not as big as Amazon, right? So, like, there's all, I think that term gets thrown around, but nobody really defines it, because there are plenty of businesses that go out of business. So just like giving that one word to say treat it like a business, I think that what I see the mistakes is they don't, like, I'm going to use the word, I'm going to define it to say treat it professionally, like we just said, use the data, use the technology, like once remove yourself from the emotion, because this is homes and people, and all businesses are, right? They're all based on people that come in to shop with you or whatever. And, you know,
yeah,
whether you own a little grocery store or a coffee shop, right? But at the end of the day, you can't, let's say, have so much emotion for the people that come in that you start giving away the coffee for free, right? I mean, it's kind of the same analogy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that, you would almost say that's absurd, right? Like, who's going to do that? And yet that's kind of the professionalism we see sometimes. Like, if you have a lease that says, you know, it's $200 for the maintenance fee, then you have to enforce that. Like, one of the things we kind of share with them is, like, that's kind of behavior that you're setting a tone, and I know you want to be nice, so then be nice by giving a gift card or something, let's say, outside of the lease. But stick to your lease terms. If those are the terms of your lease, that's your business model. And then, I guess, to piggyback that, the other mistake I hear a lot is when they talk about, you know, we'll say, like, did you run this past the lawyer? Like, when they get started, they're just getting started in business, and they don't want to go get a lawyer for, like, the first legal document, which is the lease, which is the whole, you know, that's your paintbrush. If you're the painter, that's your paintbrush. Like, you have to have the right materials, and don't get started without, even if it's LegalZoom, or I'm not saying you have to go find, you know, a Madison Avenue lawyer. I'm not saying you have to find them. I realize that budgets are tight when you're starting, but don't get started without some legal advice, and specifically from real estate investment type of attorneys. Like, get involved with a RIA, get involved somewhere so that you have a good foundational document, because that's going to be the one piece you're going to have to lean on. And I'd say that's sometimes the biggest mistake we see. And again, that's when we've seen them lose their homes and stuff, lose their investment homes, because they just didn't tie up that first piece right, you know, with the right lease and making sure, like, people add a lot of stuff for, you know, behavioral things that, like, you just wouldn't believe, like, how much stuff you should put in there to protect yourself, you know?
Yeah. Well, that is super good advice, and I'm looking at the time. This has been so good, and we've run out of time, but such wonderful advice. Like, it's super, super helpful to not be too DIY, right? You have to, sometimes you have to rely on professionals, and especially when it comes to legal matters, you know, just do it right. And one of my mentors says, if you work with the best, it's not gonna take your money. They're gonna make you money in the end. So really, you will, you know, sometimes trying to, you're penny wise, pound foolish. So that's really good advice, and then treating your business like a business. That's great. We have time for a quick Trinity, but before we do, what's the best way for people to reach you and find out more about what you do?
Well, one of the things that we have is you could go to my email, of course. That's Linda L at SecurePay1, and that's all spelled out, SecurePayone.com. Or we do have this YouTube channel that we're super proud of. We have over 500 daily videos, like 8 years worth of newsletters. Yeah. So we do a daily video every single day with tips for landlords, and they're now organized by month. So we have a theme for the month, so you can kind of scroll through the site. That's at youtube.com/securepay1, and that is really just chock full of information. And then we've got, like, newsletters on there that have been, those are all video ones, of course, because it's YouTube. And we have them, you know, in writing as well, like blogs and stuff as well. But people seem to love the, you know, the videos because they're short, they're sweet, and they get, you know, a nugget of information each day.
Great. Awesome. Okay, so you guys, Linda L at securepay1.com or youtube.com/securepay1. All right, so what is your trinity? What's one thing you're celebrating right now? What do you want to brag?
That's a difficult thing for me. I'm going to brag a little bit about our technology. One of the things that we do is so unique, and really we're now realizing it is a probably big brag, is we work with all the main softwares, I'll say, and plus some of the smaller ones. So, for instance, Buildium, PropertyWare, Folio, RepManager. And so it really has given us, like, a level of expertise that, like, we really didn't go in for that reason, I'll say. You know, again, my background was teaching and training on technology for businesses. So it wasn't intentional. We were just meeting the needs of our clients. And because of that, now we're offering people the ability to just help them set up their technology. And we're realizing there's so many people. So I'd say it's something that, like, now that we look in the rearview mirror, it's like, wow, we really do have some expertise here.
Well, brag.
Very well bragged.
What's one thing you're grateful for?
That's going to have to be the team here and my own family. So I don't know about you, but and I'm not sure everybody, you know, can relate to this, but when you start a business, it's really tough on your family, very, very hard on them. It's still very long hours, and, you know, it is definitely a baby that needs lots of attention. So I really appreciate, you know, what they've done for me to support me through this. And then the team I have here, that was a real growth and learning experience for me. Anybody that has teams know how difficult that can be. And I have been blessed the last couple of years, and I definitely count that as a gratitude.
Beautiful. And last but not least, what's one thing you desire?
Well, you know what? What I have found, and this, again, is kind of in the rearview mirror, I feel like I do need to even get more involved with young people, because it was happening naturally, but now I think it needs to be even more of a focus. Like, when they get out of college, I'll say, or even, you know, while they're in college, like, kind of sharpening their skills. Like, I've been doing a lot of research and stuff on the technology of AI and the impact it's going to have. Like, you know, it's been around, it's a buzzword, but it's back to kind of those data points. And I think that our next set, I'll say, of young people all graduating and stuff, there are going to be so many changes for them that they need to, like, get in touch with just what is that. You don't have to be a computer scientist to, like, embrace that and realize all the value that they can bring to their workplace by having a better core understanding of what is data points, you know what I mean, and how they impact the business. So I've been working with a high school in the city, and it's, you know, challenged in their families and stuff, and not everybody just goes to the best colleges, you know. So I'm going to try to work with them to come up with something that would help them to at least get, hopefully stir some interest and some passion, and, you know, I just think there needs to be some alternatives, you know.
So your desire is
to help
in a nutshell. Okay.
To help the young people. You didn't tell me it was only supposed to be 10 words. All right. To help young students.
So with this this intelligence technology. All right. Well, shall your desire be, or so much better than you can imagine. Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful interview. My gosh, so much amazing information. Again, y'all, you can reach Linda at lindal@securepay1.com or go check out her YouTube channel. And you can reach me at realestateinvestorgoddesses.com. You can join our vibrant Real Estate Investor Goddesses community. We have women from all over the country and the world that are part of our group. And we also can also find out about our upcoming Wealth Builder program. If you're wanting to invest in real estate, this is a 3-month program to give you the exact steps you need in order to get your first investment property and to do so in a way that is divinely feminine. So if you're interested in that, check it out on the website at realestateinvestorgoddesses.com under programs, and join us next time for another incredible real estate investing goddess interview. Bye-bye.